I'm Joy Manning, editor of Edible Philly.
And I'm Marisa McClellan, author of Food in Jars.
Welcome to Local Mouthful. We're here to talk shop with obsessed home cooks everywhere. This week, we're talking about sweet potato tacos, chicken and cream cheese sandwiches, and how to reheat your food. But first, let's talk about something we read this week. Did you see the article I sent you about how New York Times cooking became the best comment section on the internet?
I did.
What'd you think?
I thought it was really interesting because, I do sometimes turn to the New York Times for recipes if I'm looking for something specific or I remember seeing something from years ago. And I do agree that the comments there are far and away more useful than just about any other website, in large part because they are actually offer up some constructive criticism or useful adaptations that you don't see everywhere.
Yeah. Usually the comment section is a cesspool.
Yeah.
Especially if I wrote an article, I do not look at the comment section. But in general, I stay out of the comment section. But this article really made it seem like the comments were part of the value proposition that New York Times cooking is offering.
Well, it does seem a little bit like they have created a community there that I think that the other place where comments are sometimes useful is Food 52. Mm-hmm. Although I don't go there for recipes too much anymore. But, you know, when you have a space where active, dedicated cooks are engaging around a topic, you do get some good conversation.
In the article, Sam Sifton, who's the editor of the food section for the New York Times, was interviewed, and he theorizes that the reason that the comments, the tone is different is because they're not called comments. They're called notes.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine that such a small thing would make such a big difference, but maybe it does. What do you think?
It could. I mean, you know, I still have comments on my website, which not every blog does at this point. And I've never found my comments to be unhelpful, but sometimes people don't take the time to read them and they'll ask the same question over and over again. And because they're called notes, I feel like people think they're more critical to the use of the recipe and so are more apt to read them than if they're called comments.
Right.
And I do think that changes the tone and makes them a more useful application.
Yeah. It has me almost sold on subscribing to New York Times Cooking.
You know, Scott subscribes to the New York Times online, and so we get access to cooking as part of that. And I will say that I appreciate it. Like, if I have a particular ingredient that I know I want to use, that I can go there and search for that ingredient and often find some useful things.
It is really just like a tremendously large archive.
It is.
That said, you're not 100% guaranteed to have a great recipe.
No, I mean, it's like any other recipe database. You know, there's some hits and there's some misses. I think one of the things I like about having access to New York Times Cooking is I like Martha Rose Schulman's recipes a lot.
Too.
And there's a lot there. And I have like three of her cookbooks, but the problem with the cookbook is you can't search by ingredient. And so
you can if you use Eat Your Books.
That is true. That is true. But, you know, you can go to the New York Times Cooking and often what I'm looking for is I'm looking for a recipe by her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an easy way to find them.
Just as a reminder, Eat Your Books is that cool service where you enter the names of all your cookbooks and then you can search.
Yeah.
And you'll find out, you know, if you put in tomatoes or whatever, you'll find out which books have tomato recipes and what pages they're on.
Yeah. And it's a great service and they have indexed all my cookbooks.
Just didn't want to leave.
Yeah.
Leave that unexplained. So yeah, it's the closest I came to subscribing to New York Times Cooking. I actually intended to do it. I thought, oh my God, I'm sold. Okay, now I'm sold. But then time got away from me and I didn't do it yet.
Well, and I mean, there's lots of ways to get your hands on recipes. So
right.
Certainly not the only
right.
one.
No, of course. But to me, it made the biggest case so far for it to be worth the money that they're charging.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, true.
And I'd never thought that I would say that about the comments section. So, of course, we'll post a link to the article. And why don't you comment on the comments at the New York Times Cooking website so we know how you feel about them.
Yeah. All right. So I want to hear about these sweet potato and black bean tacos, Joy.
I recently spent a week in Farmville for my niece's 5th birthday.
Yeah.
And as I might have mentioned before, I have a hard time cooking for her because she's picky.
As many little kids are.
And it makes me really sad when I make something that she doesn't eat. And actually, like, this is only a partial win. I thought I knew that she liked black beans.
Yeah.
I knew that she liked sweet potatoes and I knew that she liked tacos. So it felt
you
like
felt
a
safe.
Good bet.
Yeah.
And so it ended up being, it was a little bit hard for her to like manage a soft taco, but she ended up eating it out of a bowl and liking it pretty well, or at least eating it. So hey. That felt like a huge win. Though the rest of us completely loved the sweet potato and black bean tacos.
I've had sweet potato tacos that you've made, like when we filmed the Yum mm-hmm. videos, those sweet potato
with greens.
And, yeah. Kale. Those were amazing.
Oh yeah. I usually love greens in my tacos, yeah. But.
It's a hard sell for a 5-year-old.
She's not into green things. But she has told me point blank she does not like vegetables. Which is not true, but.
My nephew Benny says the same thing and then refuses. Like, his only produce is applesauce squeeze pouches.
Mm.
So, like, you know.
I still feel like it was a win.
Yeah, I think it's great.
She ate the filling. And she ate the tortillas, too, but separately. And, of course, we served it with a pile of guacamole.
Yeah.
But I made it by sauteing the black beans and some cumin, nothing spicy
yeah.
though. She doesn't like anything spicy.
Yeah.
And onions in a skillet, just as I had done in that video,
mm-hmm.
which I think I can find and we can link
yeah,
to.
Yeah, I know where they are.
And then I diced up a couple of big sweet potatoes and I roasted them because, you know, there was, how many of us are, were there? Four?
Yeah.
And so the skillet, I didn't want to overcrowd the skillet. So I roasted the potatoes in the oven.
Uh-huh.
And then just mix them all together in the skillet before serving. Squeeze them with lime juice.
Sounds good to me.
And then on the side, everything on the side.
Yes.
Diced jalapeno, diced chopped cilantro, diced red onion, hot sauce, and of course guacamole, which there I could not find ripe avocados at the Walmart in Farmville.
Oh, God.
And so they had a prepared like tub.
Uh-huh.
And you know what? It was great.
You know, sometimes you go for it. There's no harm.
Certainly better than not having
yeah.
guacamole with your tacos.
It actually sounds like a really great idea for a party, particularly if you have people coming over who have a variety of diets
mm-hmm.
because, you know, you've got the protein from the beans. If you have some people who aren't vegan, you could put out some cheese and sour cream.
Right.
But it'd be a really good way to, you know, put out a taco bar and, you know, let people set themselves up the way they want.
I also made like a tasty slaw.
Ooh.
And I used bagged broccoli slaw, which you may know is one of my favorite ingredients that I think you might know. I've read about it in a cookbook 1,000 years ago.
No,
I was like, what is that? But then you.
Yeah, I love broccoli slaw.
You grew up with it.
Yeah, my mom used to buy it when I was a kid. And when she first brought it home, I remember thinking, what is this? But it's a staple.
In case you don't know, broccoli slaw is the stems of broccoli shredded fine, mixed up typically with carrots, sometimes with a little purple cabbage, and sold bagged like
yeah.
you would buy a coleslaw mix. And it's really great as a slaw. It's wonderful in a stir fry. You can add it to soups to bulk up your vegetable.
Yeah, it's really
quotient.
A good one.
Yeah, I definitely like it. I don't have it all the time, but I should.
I often buy it and I'll add it to like fried rice,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, it's just an easy way to not have to do a ton of chopping. And like if I have leftover rice, it just all comes together really nicely.
Yeah. So I definitely, what did I do with the, I think for the dressing, I just mixed a little bit of lime juice, a little mayo, a little sour cream, chopped cilantro.
Sounds good to me.
I didn't really expect Henrietta to eat that and I don't believe she did, but I needed to have some kind of vegetable side.
Well, one of, you know, recently, so we talked about the fact that I'm pregnant on the show last week. And one of the commenters said in the response to me worrying about picky eaters, they said, what matters most is to see the adults around them demonstrating that they're eating a variety of foods more than it is important for kids to do it. So you were demonstrating
mm-hmm.
that you eat healthy foods. So,
yeah.
you know, someday. My sister, when she was growing up, hardly ate any vegetables, and now she's the biggest vegetable eater.
Myself, growing up, I ate basically just pasta and butter. Like, I was not flexible or, you know, reasonable about trying things.
You've come a long way, Joy.
So that was my what's for dinner
Sounds
accomplishment
great.
Of the week.
Now I just want a taco.
I always want a taco, frankly, 100% of the time.
True enough. So... I, you know, again, pregnant, so it's definitely impacted how I'm eating. And one of the things that I'm really finding is that I need a ton of protein, which is not surprising, that, you know, baby bodies are built of protein. And I found myself craving a thing my mom used to make for me when I was a kid. It's going to sound kind of disgusting, but I love it. And I made a batch this week and it was just the best thing ever. And so, okay. brace yourself. It is a can of chicken, like of white meat chicken. And I don't know why. Like, I think my mom always made it with canned chicken because it was easy and she was making it for lunch.
Hold up.
Yes.
You can go to the store and buy canned chicken?
Yeah. It's actually, if you're having like a protein emergency or you need some like, yeah, it's
like
just,
tuna.
Yeah. It's like high quality, you know, canned white meat chicken.
Is it packed in water?
Uh-huh. You've never.
I feel like I have like ruptured the space-time continuum and now I'm in a different timeline where a canned chicken is a thing that exists.
It totally exists.
Do other people know about this?
I would assume so. I bought it at Target. So like it's out there. I mean, it's pretty easy to find and it's not very expensive. And it's a really good way to like, you know, as someone who has intense protein needs right now, get the protein in.
I did not think that this is where we were going.
I know. I'm sorry.
I have more questions. I'm so sorry. So is it white meat chicken?
It's white meat chicken.
Is it like a whole chunk of chicken or like little pieces?
It looks much like tuna. It's like chunks of white meat chicken.
Tuna in the can is kind of flaky, though. Is the chicken flaky?
The chicken is flaky. It kind of shreds.
Wait, did I ask if it was white meat or dark meat?
White meat, yes.
Okay. Isn't it like desiccated beyond recognition? Because to can something like that, the heat has to be, you know, what are the rules? Like
250 degrees.
Okay,
yeah.
So
it is. Well, the thing is, it is past the point of being dried and it's just kind of tender. But that's where the cream cheese comes
in. That makes
in.
No sense to me, but go on. Okay.
Anyway.
Let's just put this. We should have done a whole segment dedicated to canned chicken, which I didn't know was a thing.
It is a thing.
Okay, moving on.
Okay, so anyway. So when I was a kid, the way this came about is that I didn't like lunch meat growing up. And my mom was desperate to get me to eat something other than a peanut butter and jelly sandwich for lunch every day. And so she started making this spread that was two parts canned chicken and one part cream cheese. And she would do it in the food processor. And I know, it's terrible.
This is just an example of the fact you can put two parts anything with one part cream cheese and it's going to taste good.
True enough. But so recently I found myself craving this chicken
particular
spread,
thing,
you know, because and so I made a batch this week. And oh my God, if it did not hit the spot. And I did make it a little fancier in that I added some dried herbs and I added some pepper. I didn't add like chopped onion or anything, but I think the next time I do it, I'll add some like diced onion. But it's so good. I mean, at least to me right now, it is the most delicious thing.
Look, I don't argue with the deliciousness of anything plus cream cheese, but I'm wondering, have you ever considered starting with a rotisserie chicken?
I haven't. And I think part of the appeal is its blandness, which is terrible. I think maybe I will try it with, you know, freshly cooked chicken at some point. But, you know, it's like I wanted to create the thing from childhood.
Sure. No, but, I mean.
Yeah, I hear you. I do hear you.
And then you put it on like toast, like a sandwich.
Yeah, I put it on a half of a toasted everything, whole wheat everything bagel.
Huh.
And then I pile, this is something different than I did when I was a kid. I pile like four or five lettuce leaves on top of it. So it's like, you know, half of the sandwich is bread and half of the sandwich is lettuce. And so it's crunchy and it's creamy. It's protein rich. It really like lights up every food receptor in my brain.
Is there salt in the can of chicken?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
So you have to be careful to not add too much salt when you're mixing it up.
Right.
But I know it sounds weird. But it really has just made me happy this week.
Where do you buy canned chicken in the store? Like, I don't even ever recall seeing it.
It's right by the tuna.
That's really wild to me.
It is actually something that at times I've kept around. Like, if I'm making chicken soup from a chicken carcass and I don't have enough meat left over from roasting the chicken, I will supplement if I'm in a pinch, I'll supplement with a can of chicken. Not often, but it's sort of like a good pantry ingredient for when nothing else is around.
Can you choose between white meat and dark meat?
I don't think so. I think they only have white meat.
That's so weird to me because dark meat would probably make more sense.
I think it's partially like they sell it as like mostly fat free.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would be harder to like make those claims.
Hmm. Yeah. I'm sure that this is popular with like people that are like athletes that are just trying to get their grams of protein.
Exactly. I know, it's weird. Yeah, but anyway.
Is this going to be the type of thing where everyone is like, duh, where's Joy been living all her life that she's never seen a canned chicken?
I don't know. I mean, it's just canned white meat chicken. But
please tell me I'm not alone.
I don't think you are. Like, if it was not for the fact that my mother was searching out ways to feed me protein at lunch when I was a kid, I don't think that I would be aware of it. But it's like, because of that, I was. Anyway, I know. It's a...
Well, I'm glad that you are heeding your cravings and making things that satisfy and delight you.
Yes. It really did make me happy.
Because that is what matters.
True enough.
So should we try to lay down some education now?
Yeah, absolutely.
We wanted to talk about the best ways to reheat your leftovers and food in general, because there are wrong ways and there are right ways.
It's true.
What are some of the things that you wanted to mention?
Well, I really, you know, in terms of like reheating meat, you can either make it delicious or you can make it sort of terrible and dried out. So we should talk about that. I know you have very strong feelings about reheating pasta. I personally, things like, you know, some things go really well in the microwave, whereas some things want a stovetop application.
Right. Well, if we can return to meat, I really try hard not to put meat in the microwave.
Oh, no, never. Yeah. So let's hit meat first.
Okay.
So like, I mean, when I was a kid, there was nothing I hated worse than reheated meat. So I learned pretty early that things like, you know, if you want to reheat like roast beef or something like that, what you want to do is either use some stock, put some stock in a pan and heat it low and slow, bring it up to temperature slowly, in a moist environment. And that really helps it from taking on like an off flavor. Another one for me is like poultry. I can't stand the, like, the flavor of it if it's just, like, quickly reheated in the microwave or done. Again, it needs moisture. It needs sort of a slow approach. And then often sometimes I, at Thanksgiving when there's leftover turkey, I refuse to reheat the turkey because I don't think it tastes good.
Yeah, I do think there's something to be said for things not getting reheated at all and you can just have them room temperature. I would say the first step to reheating or enjoying again meat is to let it come up to room temperature outside of the fridge for, you know, I don't know, 30 minutes.
Yeah, that does help a lot.
Then it's, you can do it faster and with less heat to make it warm.
Yeah, I definitely, though, like the trick of using some stock or like if you've made some sort of gravy with it, letting the meat be in some sort of moist environment so that it's not drying out and it doesn't have the opportunity to take on funny flavors.
Agreed. Now, I guess there are some meaty things that I would put in the microwave, like if it's in a stew.
Again, but like the moist environment is what helps with that. Like when I make brisket at Passover, there's often some leftover, but it reheats up really nicely because it's got all of that brisket gravy. And, you know, I make sure that it's sort of surrounded by that when I'm reheating it so that it doesn't get weird.
But leftover like steak or leftover roast chicken, I would just as soon have those things cold.
Yeah. Although, you know, leftover steak, you can dice up real fine and saute and that, and then like add it as part of like an egg dish or a potato hash. And that's a way to really revive it.
Right. You know what I like to do with my leftover frittata?
What?
I don't especially love reheated frittata either. I like to make a nice piece of toast and slice the frittata thin and then have like a frittata toast.
Ooh, that sounds really good.
That's really my favorite way.
Yeah. I've been certainly known to reheat like an egg bake, you know, but I do find that if you're not careful again with things like that, they can get a little bit rubbery and develop sort of a funny flavor.
What about pizza?
I'm a big fan of pizza in the toaster oven on a tray so that it doesn't drip cheese all over. But, you know, people always talk about reheating pizza in a skillet.
That's
with a
lid. I like to do.
Yeah.
A cast iron skillet that gets nice and hot.
Yeah.
First step, room temperature.
Yep.
And then you get your crust back, like a real nice crisp crust.
I do love, when I was a kid, my mom used to, if we didn't eat the crust of the pizza, she would save them. And then the next day she would toast them for breakfast and eat them with butter. And she loved it so much.
That's pretty funny.
It is funny.
So to do it in the skillet, I make the cast iron skillet pretty hot, like high heat. Then I put my room temperature pizza down on there and I cover it up. And then the bottom will get nice and crisp and even might char in a few new places just as the cheese remelts slightly. And that's, to me, the ticket.
Yeah. And the cover is key because you need to trap the heat so that the top then heats up and the cheese gets melty again.
Exactly.
So I know we've talked about it before, but you have a pasta reheating technique that I think is interesting.
Yes, when it comes to leftover pasta, I usually want nothing to do with it, or I should say for years I wanted nothing to do with it, until I realized if you spread it thin on a baking sheet and you cook it, reheated it at a high briefly at a high temperature, then you get little crusty bits reminiscent of the corner pieces of lasagna, and it turns your leftover pasta into something delicious.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty simple
definitely
way to do it. I also like to chop up leftover pasta and mix it into a frittata.
Like undressed pasta or like just or
no pasta like in a sauce
really
yeah kind of whatever the sauce is too. Huh. If it's a meat sauce, if it's a cheese sauce, if it's a tomato sauce, you just dump it out of the container, chop it up, and mix it with your eggs, and
interesting.
That's it's really good.
It sounds good. It's funny, I just never think of doing that, but I can see how it'd be good because eggs love like a starchy thing, like potatoes mm-hmm. are great.
It really does. Pesto,
yeah,
is a pasta and pesto is it's a great one.
That sounds so good.
Yeah, that's one of my faves. Maybe a little bit extra, whatever, like Parmesan or whatever cheese you might have had in your pasta.
Now you know, I went from dreaming about tacos to dreaming about like a
leftover pasta frittata.
Yeah, it sounds really good.
It's pretty magical.
Now you put down rice dishes here. I'm curious what you do.
I don't know. Maybe this is just a difference between me and Dan. I really need my leftover rice to have steamed, like under a piece of plastic wrap or one of those silicone lids or something.
Yeah.
Like I need it to cook in the microwave for a time for there to be steam generated, and then for it to sit and have the steam somehow like revives the rice in exactly the right way.
Interesting.
Do you know what I mean?
I do. It never would occur to me to do that. But so you'll like do it in the microwave for a few minutes mm-hmm. and then take it out and cover.
I put it in the microwave covered.
Oh, you do? Okay.
And then I just let it stand for a minute.
Got it.
So that the steam is trapped, and it helps. Because there's something really, to me, weird about reheated rice that has not steamed. It's you don't want it to be crusty or stale tasting.
I'm definitely more of a skillet person when it comes to reheating a rice dish, or like if you've got Chinese food leftovers that have some rice left in them, you know, I will start with a little slick of oil on a pan and then add the rice.
Well, if you're going for a stir-fried rice, there's nothing better than leftover rice for that. But I'm talking about maybe you have like a curry or like a stew or something that you want your rice to be soft.
No, that sounds really good. No, I that's smart. And you're not weirded out about like the plastic wrap? Do you mostly use the silicone lids now? Or
I do have the silicone lids.
Yeah.
Nothing does as good of a job as plastic wrap.
Really?
Yes, it really traps it in there. I mean,
I always feel weird about microwaving plastic wrap.
Every once in a while, I don't think it's going to hurt me.
Probably not.
But I hear you.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously, if my husband is home.
Oh, you use a silicone lid.
Yeah. Because Dan cannot tolerate the use of any kind of disposable.
I'm surprised he lets you have plastic wrap.
Well, it takes us like a year to go through a roll of
it. That's true. Sorry I brought it up.
When you've been arguing about the same stuff for 17 years, like you've reached some points of compromise, which is like one roll of plastic wrap a year is something that he can live with.
That's good. That's good. I'm trying to think of other things that get reheated on a regular basis.
This might fit into this in a way. You know how you talked about, I think an ex-boyfriend's mother taught you to wet old bread.
Oh, yeah.
I did that at one point since we originally discussed that, and it works pretty well.
It's fantastic. Yeah. My very first, like, long-term boyfriend, his mother taught me that if you've got really stale bread, you saturate it mm-hmm. with water, and then it takes a couple rounds in the oven. Like, I do it in the toaster oven.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I do two rounds of toasting, but it makes it kind of creamy inside. And
do you wrap it in aluminum foil before you do that?
No, I just throw it right in.
Yeah, that's what I did. I did find that where the wet bread was sitting on the tray in the toaster oven, it got a little stuck.
Oh, I just do it on the rack.
Yeah, so, I could have done that. I buy fancy bread, and you know, I hate to throw things away. So.
Yeah. And actually, I find the very best garlic bread is made from really stale bread that I've then rehydrated and toasted in that way, because it's really creamy on the inside. And then I just rub it with a raw garlic clove and then butter it a little bit. And it is so good.
So, that kind of falls under the category of reheating stuff. Yeah. I can't think of anything else that I want to talk about how to reheat it and what to avoid. Can you?
Not really.
I think we've done it.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that I really find, especially if you're using the microwave, is that a cover does help.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I will put an inverted plate on a bowl if I'm heating things up.
Again, not really sealed, but
yeah.
I hear you.
Not
better
sealed,
than nothing.
But it helps.
Mm-hmm.
Got to use up all the food. We don't want to be wasteful.
Right.
So.
I think that my number one tip, though, is if possible, let your refrigerated stuff come to room temperature before you try to reheat it.
Yeah, I'm bad about that. When I often am like, okay, I'm going to eat now.
Mm, no.
But I like your style, Joy.
Well, you're eating for three, so I can understand that. So I'll tell you about something that I'm loving this week.
Yeah.
I know we usually leave it to you to love the Trader Joe's products, but
it's true.
I actually had the opportunity to visit a Trader Joe's recently.
A suburban Trader Joe's, even.
Which are a little bit less crazy.
Yeah.
And so I went up and down all the aisles, like taking in all the cool Trader Joe's stuff. And I left with like a long time sentimental favorite, which is the Trader Joe's cinnamon grahams.
Which are so good.
I feel like they have been the same for 20 years.
Oh, yeah. I think they've been the same my whole life. So, you know, going on 40.
They're just thick graham crackers with like a cinnamon sugar top.
Yeah.
And wow, I had to make Dad take them to work because I was just eating them all. But they are so tasty and such a nice treat.
Yeah.
Do you buy them?
No, I try to stay away from all of the cookies and sweet crackers and things at Trader Joe's because I could eat all of them and I could eat a tub by myself really quickly.
Oh, yeah.
So
first I tried putting them in a drawer.
Yeah.
That didn't work. Well, of course, first they were out on a counter, which is like
kiss of death.
Yeah. That's a crazy thing to do.
Yeah.
Then I put them in a drawer. That didn't stop me. Then I made Dan take them to work.
Yeah. Most of the like cookies and like graham crackers and things are in the frozen food aisle at my Trader Joe's. And I can go kind of crazy in the frozen food aisle anyway. So I tend to pretend that aisle doesn't exist and I skip it.
Mm-hmm.
And everything is better when I do that because I'm not like tempted to like, oh, I'm going to get a, you know, kale and Gruyere pizza. And, oh, I'm going to get some, you know, chocolate covered sunflower seeds. And it's just better if I avoid that aisle.
That makes sense. I was on a deep trip down memory lane and it was a nostalgic purchase.
Yeah.
So. No, once every 5 years is probably not going to hurt me.
I don't fault you. I love them. I just, you know, especially because Trader Joe's is like my primary grocery store. I tend to put blinders on to a bunch of stuff there so that I can just go in and get like produce and meat and some cheese and like eggs.
That's a good approach.
Yeah. I do mostly try to, you know, they always say shop the perimeter of the store. And I find that to be a pretty good technique at Trader Joe's because that's where, you know, the produce and meat and cheese and eggs and bread and dairy products are. And then the center, like I'll dash in for beans or something. But otherwise, I can get real tempted real fast. Well, before we wrap up, I just want to remind you guys that if you have a friend or a family member who you think might like the podcast and you think they might not know how to listen to podcasts, take their phone or their, you know, iPad or other device or tablet and show them how to subscribe because we're always excited to have new listeners join our community. And that about does it for this episode of Local Mouthful. Our thanks go out to Dan Call for editing the show, to Saul Rosenbaum for designing our logo, and to Raina Rose for providing the music. And thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, make sure to subscribe via iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Local Mouthful. Sign up for our newsletter, catch up on past episodes, and check out our show notes at localmouthful.com. Until next time, happy eating.